and then we'll get into our discussion. This one deals with one very big, significant event that the actual event is not taught in the Bible, the occurrence of the event, but the prophecy of the event is, and that is the destruction of Jerusalem. And so we're going to talk about that. I think you probably figured out, if you haven't, these videos are really designed more for a kids class. But I think the lessons are still good for us as adults. So if they almost seem like they're talking down to us, it's because they're intended for a little bit younger than our age. All right, here we go.
Have you ever been told something was going to happen, and then later it didn't actually happen? Maybe your friend promised he'd come over and play, and never came over. Or maybe your parents said you could get some ice cream, but something came up and plans changed. Whatever the case, there are times that promises are made to us, and those promises get broken. Jesus made promises too. He once made a promise that something was going to happen. Something bad. And his words? Well, they came true. Jerusalem is one of the most well-known cities in the world. Sitting in the southern section of Israel, less than 20 miles from the Dead Sea, this city was the center of Jewish culture during the time of Jesus. In the middle of this city, sitting atop the highest hill, was the temple, a truly incredible building. If you lived roughly 2,000 years ago, during the time of Jesus, going up to Jerusalem would have been a big deal. Imagine walking into the city and looking up and seeing the temple. The temple was where Jewish families living under the old law of Moses would go to make animal sacrifices for their sin. The temple was always a busy place. In the 1960s, archaeologists discovered an ancient but very well-preserved Roman road next to the giant temple platform in Jerusalem. An archaeologist is a person who studies human history by digging and looking at clues buried in the ground. The pavement was almost completely untouched, and they found shops where people sold things. However, they found something mysterious, and the clues point to something Jesus had promised. In Mark chapter 13, verses 1 through 6, we read about Jesus leaving the temple, very close to the area that you see here. One of his disciples was talking about how big the stones were and how amazing the buildings were. Jesus said that not one stone would be left on top of another. They would all be thrown down. Yikes, that's some major damage. But what Jesus said that day came true. In 70 AD, the Romans, who controlled Jerusalem, destroyed the temple where the Jews worshiped God. These stones piled up on the street, they came down off this very tall wall, pushed off by the Roman soldiers, and they came crashing down onto the city street. Jesus made a promise, and it came true. This might not seem very important, but this shows us how God always keeps his promises. Think of some of the big promises God has made in the Bible. Telling Noah he would not destroy the earth again with water. Remember the rainbow? How about promising Abraham that he would make him a great nation, despite him not having a child? That came true through Isaac. Jesus himself is a promise from God. Jesus came, he was killed, and was raised for us. And now we're promised a home with him in heaven if we believe and obey him. Remember, like the temple being destroyed, what God says always comes true.
back on. So one of the things I really liked about their video series is the visuals, the graphics, especially this one. You think about the temple and Jerusalem itself. The temple is built on Mount Zion, right? The high mountain. And the city of Jerusalem is just a mountainous city, right? And you really got a sense of, as you're going through that, the elevations, right? Just going up and up and then even up, and then you get up to the temple area. It really gives you a appreciation for what it really looked like and the elevations and all of that. And one of the interesting things about that is when in the Bible it talks about traveling to Jerusalem, it doesn't matter if you're traveling from Jerusalem to the north or the south or the east or the west. How is that description? You're traveling to Jerusalem, you're traveling up to Jerusalem, right? And that's a little bit different than the way we describe things, because we describe things not from elevation, but we describe things from direction, right? If I'm going San Diego up to San Francisco, I'm going up, right? If I'm going San Francisco down to LA, I'm going down. But in the Bible, they talk about it, at least when they talk about Jerusalem, you're always talking about it from the lower to the higher. And you just got a sense of that. All right. So as we talk about the destruction of Jerusalem tonight,
It's not that I'm growing old. There it is. That's not it.
All right. So what was the big lesson here? Well, God's promises, right? Promises, promises. Who remembers that song? Promises, promises. Okay. Anyways, so the Bible is filled with God's promises, and that's one of the great things about God's revelation is He's promised certain things to us. Now, when we say God's promises are in the Bible, immediately, what kind of promises do we think of?
Fortunate.
Yeah, the good promises, right? The fortunate promises. Those are the ones we like to think about. But in this lesson, it kind of said, guess what? Some of those promises are bad. Like a promise to destroy Jerusalem, or a promise to destroy the world, or a promise to come back in judgment and destroy the wicked. So there are some promises of God that we might view as not beneficial, not good. And we don't think about it in that way, but this lesson kind of has opened that up to us. So when we consider that, I know what you're all thinking, and I know your question. Here's your question. I know you so well. Is there a way to receive God's good promises and escape the bad ones, right? That's exactly what we want. And the answer to that, for the most part, is yes. That's exactly what God's plan of salvation, that is God's grace, that is the love of Jesus demonstrated for us, that we've got these bad things that God promises are going to happen, but He wants to keep, out of love and grace, He wants to keep us away from those bad promises and to inherit the good promises. And so when you think about it, it really is a demonstration of what the Bible is all about. The plan of salvation is to keep us from those bad things that He's promised and to inherit the good promises. So as we talk about the bad promise, You were talking about the destruction of the temple. Not just the temple, but the city of Jerusalem as well. So I want to talk a little bit about the temple. Maybe you want to look at it from the standpoint of the city of Jerusalem as well. What was Jerusalem and or the temple to the Jews? What was its significance? What was it to them?
Where God dwelt.
Yeah, so if you look at the temple, in the mind of the Jews, they were told, this is the house of God. This is where God dwells with us. We never will be closer to God than when we're here at the temple. That's quite significant, right? What else?
It's the center of their worship.
Yeah.
Certain things can only be done there.
Yeah. This is their gathering place for national worship, right? This is where they come at least three times a year to worship God, maybe even more than that. This is the center of the nation's worship. Yeah, Mike?
The city was considered their protection walls.
Yeah. Exactly. It was well fortified, right? If you want a well fortified city, there's two things that help you do that. One of them is man-made, one is not. The man-made is the walls. You build the walls. You build them high. You build them strong. What's the other thing that makes a city very protected that's not man-made?
High ground.
Yeah, high ground, right? Very high. Valleys on all sides. Almost like a moat around. Very difficult to climb up that hill. And then once you climb up the hill, you got to climb up that wall. So it was a protection for the people. Good. Anything else? What did they call Jerusalem? The city of
David.
The city of David. I mean, you think about Jerusalem. Was like almost one of the last cities conquered, right? It wasn't conquered until the days of David. And even when David conquered it, the people of Jerusalem were mocking him, saying he couldn't do it. And they finally took it over and he made it into the center of everything Israel, everything Jewish, right? I mean, you look at Jerusalem and it was basically where the Jews thought, this is a city that tells the world we mean something. We have significance, right? And so you've got the temple, you've got the city itself. So significant. So here's my question. Why destroy it? Why would God destroy this city? Why would he promise to destroy it?
What's it all about?
One of the things that were done there don't need to be done there anymore because we have Jesus as our high priest.
Okay.
You don't have to go there to make sacrifices. It isn't the center of anything anymore. It's more of a historical relic to us as Christians.
Okay.
It's not the center of any of our worship.
Okay.
Not necessary anymore.
Good. In one aspect, we can definitely look at the structure of Jerusalem as a transition that God never intended the religion of Judaism just to continue. It wasn't you got Christianity, you got Judaism, and then just keep. No, at some point, the time for the Jews to come to Christ, that temporary time, comes to an end. Now they can still come to Christ, but Judaism comes to an end. And so you have the destruction of everything that was Jewish worship, and it never gets built again. You have the loss of all those genealogical records, and that is, a key factor in Jewish religion. So absolutely, that's a big part of it, okay? But there's another answer as to why God says, I'm going to destroy this. What's that?
Well, the Butterfly Church is in another place.
Okay. I think that kind of ties in with what Andrew was saying. Okay, Mike? Yeah, and that wickedness of his people culminates in what event? Yeah, they crucified the Son of God. The one that God sends to save them, they reject and they kill him. And you can't kill the Son of God and have no consequences. And so that is not an immediate judgment, but that is the reason why this is going to be destroyed. In fact, there is one prophet this is the second temple, right? This is the Zerubbabel's temple that we're looking at, upgraded by Herod. But in the days of Solomon's temple, even Ezekiel, and this is how Ezekiel opens up, he sees God's chariot, and it's this crazy looking chariot of these four creatures and so forth. And this chariot comes down out of heaven, it comes to the temple, and God gets on his chariot, and boom, God's gone. And that's a big part of Ezekiel. That might be God's house, but he moved out. And he moved out because the people were wicked. So the question comes about, is God dwelling with Israel in the days of Jesus? Is he in that temple in the days of Jesus? There's no real statement about it, but as you look at Jesus and his interaction with the Jewish people, especially the Jewish leaders, you have some very big questions as to, is God still dwelling in that house with them? Or is it like the days of Ezekiel? So now we understand the significance of it and why it's being destroyed. So let's talk a little bit about the destruction of Jerusalem. You're probably glad you're sitting kind of far away from the screen, because what you have up there is a pretty graphic picture. But that's exactly what this is. It is a horrible, terrible, death-causing, destructive event. But if you squint real well, you can see the artist has depicted something on the left side. What is being removed on the left side? Do you see it?
The candlestick.
Yeah, the lampstand, right? The lampstand. Symbolizing the temples being taken apart. And you can see people either trying to jump the wall or being thrown over. I'm not sure which one that is. So let's go over to Mark 13. This is the passage he referenced in the video. And we're just going to read the first six verses. I think most of us are well aware of this. This is the big time we think about. This is where Jesus prophesies about the destruction of Jerusalem. One stone not left upon another. The parallel to Mark 13 is what we're most well aware of. We usually go to Matthew 24, right? The destruction of Jerusalem. But it's also in Luke chapter 21. So in Mark 13, and Noah, would you read 1 through 6 for us?
Then as he went out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Teacher, see what manner of stone and what buildings are here?" And Jesus answered and said to him, "Do you see the great buildings? Not one stone shall be left upon another that shall not be thrown down." Now as he sat on the Mount of Olives, opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign when all these things will be fulfilled?" And Jesus answered them and began to say, "Take heed that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am he,' and he will deceive many."
Okay. And then we're familiar. He goes on to talk about the signs and so forth. So we look at this, Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. This is where Jesus prophesies about the destruction of Jerusalem. And this is the only time Jesus talks about the destruction of Jerusalem. True or false? False. In fact, what I want to show you tonight is that the destruction of Jerusalem was very much often on Jesus' mind and tongue the last week of his life. I'm hoping that as you see this, you're like, I never realized that. I never saw this. So let's start here, right? This is what I just talked about. These are not the only passages that talk about it, okay? It was often on his mind and his tongue. So, the final week of Jesus before the cross, let's start with the triumphant entry, right? Let's go over to Luke 19. Luke 19, we're going to look at Luke's account here. All right, so we have the triumphant entry, starts in verse 28, right? And we're very familiar with this. This is the opening event. This is a, we believe, Sunday that he comes in. And then, what is he? Well, Luke has him driving out the money changers, right? Now, let's take a look in that event. What are some of the words Jesus says in verse, actually before that, before the money changers, part of the triumphant entry, verse 42. Jesus says, "If you had known in this day, even you, the things which make for peace, but now they have been hidden from your eyes. For the day shall come upon you when your enemies will throw up a bank before you and surround you and hem you in on every side and will level you to the ground and your children within you. And they will not leave in you one stone upon another, because you did not recognize the time of your visitation." This is the triumphant entry, right? Hosanna! Hosanna in the highest. And Jesus says, listen, there's coming a time where one stone will not be left upon another. I thought that was Matthew 24. Yeah, it is Matthew 24. But it's also Luke 19, the triumphant entry mentions it. They didn't recognize the time of their visitation. Well, who was visiting? The Messiah, the Son of God. And they didn't recognize it. All right, so the very first event, the triumphant entry, talks about it. All right, Matthew 23. What do we know about Matthew 23? This is where Jesus just lays into the Pharisees, right? What's that phrase he says? "Oh, you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites," right? Well, in the midst of going after the Pharisees, telling all the truth, he says in verse 37 through 39 these words, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together, the way a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you were unwilling. Behold, your house is being left to you desolate. For I say to you, from now on you shall not see me until you say, 'Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord.'" So you can see, especially those words I've highlighted, your house. What house? The temple. Your house is being left to you desolate, right? And this is a beautiful passage because he's talking to Jerusalem. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem. And what do? They kill the prophets. They stone those who are sent to her. What did Jesus want to do? He wanted to gather the people of Jerusalem like a hen gathers her chicks. But Jerusalem said, no way. We're not into that.
Luke 17. Not Luke 21, but Luke 17. On that day, let not the one who is on the housetop, whose goods are in the house, go down and take them away. And likewise, let not one who is in the field turn back. Look at Jesus talking about when that day happens. You might be on the rooftop and you might have your stuff down below. Don't go get it. Take off. Get out of here. Flee for your life. Right? If you're in the field, great. Stay there. Run away. Remember Lot's wife? Whoever seeks to keep his life shall lose it. Whoever loses his life shall preserve it. And one of the interesting things about this is this is right there in Matthew 24, the statement. So we know he's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. Premillennialists use this passage in Matthew 24 to talk about the rapture. Because right after this, it says, there will be two men in the field, one will be taken, one will be left. There will be two women grinding at the stone, one will be taken, one will be left. And they like to say, oh, it's the rapture. The righteous will be taken, the unrighteous will be left. And when does it happen? It happens like that. Right? I don't know if you ever saw those movies by Kirk Cameron, Left Behind, but the very first one's about the rapture, and here's this car, and it crashes, and they're like, whoa, what happened? Well, there's no driver. His clothes are there, but there's no driver. He was raptured. The family comes home. Mom's not home. Her clothes are on the floor, but she's been raptured, right? Well, that would make no sense why Jesus would say this. If it happens like that, there's no time to get your clothes. If you're going to be raptured, why would you want to get your clothes or your possessions or anything? You see, when you ignore the context and just pick a few passages, you get in all sorts of trouble. That's just a little aside there. All right. Now, in Matthew 24 and in Mark 13, Jesus at some point stops talking about the signs. These are the signs. There's going to be wars. There's going to be famines and so forth, right? And he starts talking about the actual event. Well, in those two passages, he talks about when you see the abomination of desolation. Those are the words he uses. Those are words taken from Daniel. Yeah, Daniel. Okay? But Luke actually explains, he describes the abomination of desolation. When you see the abomination of desolation, well, what are you going to see? What does it look like? Well, look at Luke chapter 21 and verse 20. But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then recognize her desolation is at hand. This isn't talking about the end of the world. This isn't talking about the second coming of Jesus. This is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. What is the abomination of desolation? It's that. Now remember the triumphant entry? He talked about that very thing. Her enemies will surround her, pin her in on every side. All right, on the way to the cross. Jesus talked about the destruction of Jerusalem. Did you know that? Here it is. Luke 23, 28 through 31. Daughters of Jerusalem. Remember there's some women weeping? And he talks to the daughters of Jerusalem, stop weeping for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will say, blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed. Then they will begin to say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. For if they do these things in the green tree, what will happen in the dry tree? Right? The dry one. So what's he talking about? He's talking about, why is it wrong to be a nursing mother? Why is it so bad to be a mother with a child? Because you can't flee. It's harder to flee, to run, to get out of Dodge. Oh, daughters of Jerusalem, that's what's happening, that's what's coming. So in addition to all of those references in the last week, the first event, the last event, right? The triumphant entry, and then the next Friday, where the death of Jesus. In addition, I want you to consider this. The cleansing of the temple a second time. Now, I'm not dogmatic on this. But I'll just tell you, some people view that. The first time it happens at the beginning of his ministry, some view that as Jesus trying to straighten things out. Giving them, listen, this is the Lord's house. We need to treat it with respect and honor and reverence. The second time, they haven't learned their lesson. And some view it as, that's it. He's not fixing it. He's saying, that's it. Almost as to say, I'm cleansing it today. Tomorrow it's going to be destroyed. It's something to worth considering. All right. The cursing of the fig tree, Matthew 21:18. This is what my whole Florida College lecture was on. What is the curse of the fig tree? Why does he curse the fig tree? Because it's not bearing fruit the way it's supposed to. What is Jerusalem's problem? They're not bearing fruit for God. And instead, they're killing the fruit that God sends them. The parable of the landowner, Matthew 21:40-41. Let's take a look at those because it's interesting. These parables get very specific. Let's go over to Matthew 21:40-41. Daniel, would you read for us those verses 40 and 41?
21, 40, 41.
Correct.
Well, these two commandments depend on all the law and the prophets.
Matthew 21. Verse 40. One chapter.
They said to them, you will put this
Can you have your wife who has her glasses read the passage?
Therefore, when the owner of the vineyard comes, what will he do to those things? He will bring those wretches to our worship, and they reply, and he will rent the vineyard to other tenants, who will give him his share of the crops in harvest time.
Yeah. So, again, is this talking, is he kind of picturing that end? It seems to be. He's talking about these vine growers, right? The Jews, and what's going to happen? Well, they kill his son. They kill the owner of the field or the vineyard's son. So what he's going to do? He's going to bring them to an end and give it to others, right? Maybe the Gentiles there. And then verse 42, Jesus said to them, did you never read in the scriptures, the stone which the builders rejected, this became the cornerstone. This came about from the Lord, and it's marvelous in his eyes. So therefore I say to you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a people producing the fruit of it. I mean, it just all lays out very, very parallel. And then let's go over to Matthew 22. And Mike, would you read verse 6 and 7 for us?
And the rest seized his servants, treated them spitefully, and killed them. But when the king heard about it, he was furious, and went out, sent out his armies, destroyed those murderers, and burned up their city.
Yeah. Even in the parables, he's bringing up this picture of them being killed and the city set on fire. So this is very much on Jesus' mind because he knows his going to the cross is going to lead to this. So which promises do you want? The destruction of Jerusalem serves as a shadow of the final judgment coming one day. And this is a point I want to make for us. We might think, oh, well, destruction of Jerusalem, it happens. I get those passages. But it happened 2,000 years ago. What does it matter to me? Well, what it matters to you is it's one of those stories where God says, I'm going to tell you how I judge people and why I judge people so that you can learn. It's such a great parallel because what? God has promised, there it is, God has promised he's going to judge us. And so we need to take those passages very seriously. We need to what? Accept Jesus' warnings. The flood of Noah, the destruction of Sodom, the destruction of it, or the captivity of Israel and Judah, the destruction of Jerusalem, they're all warnings to us. So that what? As we accept the warnings, then we accept Jesus' grace, Jesus' invitation, so that what? We can follow Jesus to safety. Why is he telling his disciples? Why is he telling the people about the destruction of Jerusalem? Because he just wants them to know what's coming? No, he wants them to understand they can escape the bad promise and have the good promise. And that is the same for you and me. And it's the same for people who haven't seen it yet. So let them know you can have God's good promises and escape his bad promises. All right, that's it for tonight. We will have lesson 3, and I think I'm going to try to get lesson 4 in next week as well. We're going to double up.